A very warm welcome to every single jewel, every single listener hearing my voice this afternoon on the live feed from the Rivonia Studios at cliffcentral.com. Just before I introduce my special guest, this is Professor David Block. You can reach me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Starry Galaxy Man. Well, not difficult to remember, at Starry Galaxy Man. One word, and you'll reach me on my live Twitter feed. Of course, to reach us here in studio, the Twitter handle is at cliffcentral.com. WeChat, which is very popular amongst our listeners, is Cliff Central. On Facebook, you can reach us at Cliff Central. On Instagram, at Cliff Central. And here is the magic number. Please feel free to dial this number at any time to tickle my brain or that of my special guest today. 0861 555 189. You're listening to Professor David Block. And as you and I traverse the paths of this life, the journey on the pale blue dot, our planet Earth, I believe that many of our listeners have dreams, but they also want to have some heroic figures that they can look up to. People filled with a sense of integrity, people filled with a sense of dignity, people filled with a sense of purpose, and the list is indeed endless. And I will be introducing my very special guest this afternoon, who is Gary Rivas. Gary, a very, very warm welcome to you here in our Rivonia studios.
Thank you, David. It's great being here with you.
It's awesome. And just to set a little bit of background, Gary and I are indeed good friends. And Gary and I have met several different locales, including a very special congregation, Grace Point, just down the road from here, in fact, not too far. And Gary Rivas is the lead pastor at Grace Point, and ably assisted by his other half, Jackie Rivas. And today, I preempted the conversation by mentioning that each one of us have got people, mentors, people we look up to. And one of those, of course, globally around the world was that of Nelson Mandela. Now, there's a very interesting connection between Nelson Mandela and our special guest today, Gary Rivas. And that is, I happened to be on Twitter, and I was busy tweeting. I think it's very interesting to think that a professor of applied maths can actually do a little bit of tweeting, Gary.
It's amazing. A miracle indeed.
It's just so, it's so awesome, as my twins would say, Gary. And so I was tweeting Gary, and I follow Gary Rivas. He'll give us his Twitter handle in a moment, but he's always got such interesting tweets and feeds and so forth. And the one day I saw something and it says, I'm off to attend a special funeral. And I thought, wow. Now, I'm not going to preempt this anymore. Gary, why just lead us through the incredible set of miracles, beginning right with the invitations and to this incredible funeral. Why didn't you just begin at the start us off right at the beginning and take us through one of the most incredible miracles I've heard of recently?
Thanks, David. It's great being with you on the show today. And again, thank you for the invitation.
It's a great pleasure.
I appreciate your friendship. People may or may not know, but Nelson Mandela was shaped by Methodism, and was part of the Methodist Church,
yes,
in his early years. And
yes.
At his passing, the Methodist Church got very involved. I led a tribute service to him at the Bryanston Methodist Church.
Yes.
After he had passed away. And obviously our senior clergy that were involved with him and with the family, and so we're very involved in part of the mourning process and the caring, even in his last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, you know, it was sort of pretty much that I'm just a local pastor of a church and that. And the one day I was in my office and that in December and that, and one thing that drives me crazy, Dave, is phones ringing off the hook and that. So we've got this thing in our offices, in the church offices, saying, listen, if the phone rings and it's not yours, it doesn't really matter. Just answer the thing, whatever you do.
Cause, yes.
You know, and the phone was ringing off the hook and that, and one of our sound engineers answered the phone. And I didn't know any of this. I was busy in meetings. And then just before I was about to leave at 5, I got a knock on the door, and Malou popped his head into my office and said, listen, Gary, someone from the president's office has phoned, and they wanted to speak to you. And I said, well, do you have a number? Do you have anything? So he said, no, he had nothing. I immediately regretted asking anyone to answer the phone. We're just sticking to it was something about me going to, having been invited to go to Nelson Mandela's funeral.
That is awesome.
I know. It was just absolutely mind-blowing. But the background to it is that what happened is that quite a few people, what happened was that you were on a list. So either you're on the NEC list or
the A list or the B.
Yeah, and a whole lot of lists and this list and that list and all the rest of it. Yes. And each person in the office of the presidency was given a list of people to phone, depending what list you're on, the Council of Churches or the Communist Party or the or whatever it may have been, you know.
Yes.
And so it was just, as you could imagine, I mean, it was just absolutely chaos. But the office of the presidency were amazing in how they handled this. I mean, I don't think we realized the operational, just to get the thing off the ground and to make it happen was just incredible. Mm-hmm. So so days followed that no one had any idea. My name was down on to be flown down on one of the aeroplanes, but I needed the invitation itself. I needed a special pass. I needed a security clearance.
There were passes at each delegate.
That's exactly right. Because you had to go, there's a security clearance
right,
and all the rest of it.
Right.
Anyway, days and days and days, two, 3 days passed and that, and eventually I'd pretty much given up on the thing. I thought, well, maybe it was just a mistake, but we couldn't find out.
And unless phoned.
Yeah, and unless I knew what list I was on, I wasn't going. So I phoned anyone and everyone that I knew that maybe had a contact somewhere, whatever the case may be, and nothing. Then at the very, very last minute, I was told, this is literally the day before the funeral, go to Soweto, to Nasrec, and there's offices there and you need to go there. Anyway, so eventually I went to Nasrec, and I went in and there was machinery going on there of people being, things printed and tags given and security checks and that. And I went along there and said, look, apparently I've been invited to the funeral. I've got no idea what, apparently I'm supposed to be on a list. Well, I tell you, David, I went through lists and lists, and people were going through lists, and obviously my name was nowhere to be found in that on any list, not on a church list, not on a, anyway. So eventually I was about to leave, and I thought, well, that's it, and on my way out, and that I got a tap on the shoulder, and the lady said, look, there is one more list. I said, look, I'll have a look through the list if you like. And she said, no, this is, the family's list and that, And my name was on the list.
On the family list.
On the family list, yeah.
That's an
invitation. So, David, was probably words just fail me to be part. I mean, just Nelson Mandela is such a legacy of him, obviously. And just to be part of that, I sometimes find it hard to even imagine, that it was a possibility for me to go and that I was invited to be part of it. It was an incredible, humbling experience. So we flew down on the plane, landed in East London.
Landed in East London. If I recall, it was in the wee hours of the morning.
There were
many hours, weren't there, from where you landed to Kounou?
Yeah, no, it was crazy because basically what happened is that so after all the security clearance and all the rest that I got given, my accreditation and that, and then left the next day to fly down to East London and arrived there's obviously top security. We whisked off to a room and that. And then at midnight that night, we had to meet back at the airport again to take the trip by bus to Kounou. And got back to the airport at midnight that night, got on the bus, did the three or 4 hours drive through, and just arriving there was again just completely surreal. And it felt that it was, that I was in a dream. And just so incredibly privileged and humbled to be there. And considering the events running up to it and that. So, you know, it was so crazy running around trying to understand where the invitation came from, how I came to be
part of it, and all
the rest of it. And then to eventually next minute sort of be landing in East London and then on the bus and that. And just the sense of the thing that amazed me is that everyone, no matter who you were, understood that sort of next to the greatness of Nelson Mandela, everyone else was sort of equal on the same level.
Wonderful.
So I was in a short arm's length away from Prince Charles, and he was sort of mingling with everyone Jerry Adams and others and that were there.
Awesome.
Everyone sort of mingling, understanding the greatness of the moment to pay honor to Tata was just to be part of that was something that'll sort of be my memory. And I find myself sometimes going through just the events and that from that phone call to actually getting there and being part of the service and that and being part of just that whole day was just incredible. And then after the funeral we had there was some eats and that, and then drove back to East London with the bus, back on the aeroplane and I got back home at midnight the next night.
I'm sure, Gary, that as you were sitting there, and for example, Ahmed Kathrada got up to speak and so forth, you must have been so moved as to the fact that the human spirit knows no limits. In other words, you were honoring a man whose spirit soared, whose spirit knew no earthly limits. Is that true?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It's just that the effect that he had on people, irrespective of what your standing was in life and who you were, was just incredible. Mm. And I tell you something, you hear stories, you know, and obviously there's anecdotes and stories of the type of man that he was and always will be in people's minds and hearts and that. But you actually see it being played out by the amount of the people at the funeral.
Staggering.
And the way they were interacting with each other and the way they were, it was a beautiful thing. And so it transcended him, you know, even his death. You know, that his spirit and that there was a sense of wanting to carry on with that understanding of people's humanity.
Mm.
It was a beautiful
And what
thing.
Was the buzz like for those of us who weren't there at the funeral?
Yeah.
Was it one of just, you know, interacting, networking about, say, memories going back to Robben Island? Or was it just something far more deeper? Did it really go into your heart? What were people feeling at the funeral?
So I think initially in that it was almost disbelief. Even although there was this preparation of his passing and people, or even although he had, obviously my understanding, he had been, you know, was less involved in public, in the public eye and all the rest of it. And we knew that he was sick and that. But when that phone call came through that he had died and it came through on the news and that, I think that it's, no matter how much, and I find this in my work, no matter how much you prepare for someone's passing when they die, it is still incredibly, obviously, a painful. So originally, disbelief. You know, and even
interesting.
I almost had the sense that of people walking there, sometimes almost in the beginning, walk around in a bit of a daze that this is not real. Exactly, and this is not reality. Mm. So it went from that to moments of incredible celebration, of celebrating his life, and a joyous and victorious, and just a real sense of joy in knowing his contribution and obviously being part of that moment, and then of course to an incredible sadness, you know. I remember when they took the coffin out and that, it was just death. It was like, so, well, you know, almost that's it.
How did you actually feel when, say, Ahmed Kathrada spoke, and you know, you just sensed here were people who served time on Robben Island with him, but again, whose spirits knew no limits? You must have been it must have been, the whole funeral for you must have been very emotive. I think if any funeral touched one's heart, surely it must have been that one. And you, as a pastor, are obviously involved with funerals and with weddings all the time, but this one must have had a very deep significance for you.
Yeah. I think that for me, it was moving because one of the things that really touched me was, again, we're reminded of the impact that one man can
one
have.
Man, yes.
It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So the impact that he had so far and wide. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the people that were the mourners that were at the funeral. Mm-hmm. So no matter who it may be, just the impact was so worldwide and was so fair that mm-hmm. one man, and considering most of his time was actually spent in prison,
incredible.
But yet his impact mm-hmm. knew, exactly what you said, his impact knew no bounds, mm-hmm. you know. And so, but there was part of that, there was also part of a sense of loss in saying we wonder, you know, the end of an era mm. is an incredibly sad thing.
That is true. That is true.
It was mm-hmm. the end of an era, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't know if we will in this life form, in the physical sense,
right.
anyway, know anyone again.
Exactly.
You know, mm-hmm. and just the privilege of being of having been part mm. Of that moment and part mm. of the, irrespective of whether I was at the funeral or mm. just to be part of that era. Mm. But especially, David, in that, I mean, the context that I grew up in,
mm. Tell us about
where the words, where the name Nelson Mandela would not be mentioned,
right?
You know,
right.
In the context of
and his photograph
in
wouldn't be seen.
No, of course, of apartheid mm-hmm. and growing mm-hmm. up in a middle class sort of white suburban mm-hmm. neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
And to have seen the what has happened in that time mm-hmm. of how to have, certainly from that perspective to where it was at the moment around that, for where people around the world and people in this country who desperately mourned his death. You know?
Mm.
So going from, certainly from a small percentage of our community mm. that would not allow to even have mentioned his name or spoken of him mm-hmm. or had a picture of him, to see the love being poured out in a way of mourning his loss mm-hmm. was incredible. And that was evident the whole time, leading up to the funeral, through the funeral, after the funeral.
Amazing. Yeah. Now, of course, you had dealings with the Mandela family in Soweto. I remember your dear wife, Jackie, sharing some of those moments. Are there any moments you'd like to share with our listeners with regard to interactions you had with the Mandela family in Soweto itself?
Yeah, I mean, one of them was pretty much a very sad moment in 2010 when the granddaughter was killed coming back from the World Cup, you know, from mm-hmm. the soccer match. And mm-hmm. I remember being at the home and in Orlando and that, and seeing Nelson Mandela come into the house and that to mourn the death, you know, of the child. And
and he must have been moved beyond measure.
Yeah. And one thing I just remember about him walking into the room and just how he filled the room just with his presence was just incredible. And of course at that stage in that, he was really struggling to walk.
Right.
It was a struggle for him. Mm-hmm. And he walked into the room, and I could never forget his smile. Mm. And and he broke out into a very loud "Goeie naand almal," and it was just incredible, you know. So that moment of, you know, and again, and I said this at the memorial service that we had for him at the Branson Methodist Church, that one thing that I said, you know, a lot of people can say a lot of things about Nelson Mandela, but don't ever forget that there was an immense sacrifice mm-hmm. that was paid. You know, mm-hmm. and not only by him, but by his children
mm-hmm.
and by his grandchildren.
By the whole family.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, I don't think we have any understanding of the level of
mm-hmm.
pain and sacrifice, mm-hmm. you know, and what he gave up and what his family gave mm-hmm. up. I mean, I know what it's like in that I've just spent the last couple of days in Dar es Salaam and just being away from my family for 4 days, you know, just
takes its toll.
No, of course, you know. Mm. So to spend that amount of time and to have your children buried while you're in prison, and to have family members, and so the sacrifice that the whole family paid.
Mm.
There are people who do know, but I think the majority of people don't understand the sacrifice that was made.
Mm.
Incredible sacrifice. Mm. So that moment of him coming into the house and just wanting to come and mourn was but yet even in death how his presence was felt because he had the most soothing presence, I think. Mm-hmm. It was an incredible thing. Yeah.
Of course, as you know, Gary, I've had the privilege of meeting him a few times together with my dear wife, Liz, who's listening in this afternoon. And it's hard to describe to our listeners, but you've used the words, his presence filled the room. And I didn't know how more aptly to describe that, but it's just so true, is that when he walked into a room, you certainly knew about it. There was a warmth, there was a caring, there was a listening ear, there was attention to children in the room first and foremost. That to me was extraordinary, with no sense of distraction.
I did incredibly well when I met him there and shook hands. I just burst into tears. It was just so overwhelming.
So moving.
So overwhelming, that. So I guess part of that is that, an opportunity for me to have been at his funeral in Kunu was just one of the greatest privileges of my life. It was an incredible thing.
That's awesome.
Something that I hold on to.
So we are going to listen to some Vivaldi, and we're going to be taking a short break. This is Professor David Block. You're looking up. You are listening to Looking Up with David Block, in awe and in wonder. Just to give you our contact details on the phone, reach us on 0861-555-189, 0861-555-189. On Twitter at CliffCentral.com, WeChat account is Cliff Central, Facebook Cliff Central, and Instagram at Cliff Central. Now, sit back, close your eyes, experience the change of the seasons, from spring with its vibrance, to summer with its glory, to winter with its snow in the Northern Hemisphere, and then sit back and imagine yourself experiencing seasons in your own life. A very warm welcome again to all our listeners. You are listening to David Block, Professor David Block, and we are looking up today with a dear friend of mine, someone who occupies a special place in my Twitter feeds and in my heart, and that is Gary Rivas, who is the lead pastor at Grace Point, just down the road, in fact, from us here in Rivonia. I'm sure that each one of you hearing my voice today dreams in some sense or another to become a leader. It could be perhaps being a housewife. It could be perhaps someone in Chicago or New York or Los Angeles or San Diego listening to us today and saying, I want to be at the cutting edge of my dreams. And as I've often said publicly, God gives one the unique capability not to live a small life, but to live a big life. I often think, you know, Gary, of Paul in prison, in jail. And in a sense, people would say, my, but you're so confined. And yet he was able to transcend the human barriers keeping him in his cell, and to transcend, and his spirit is yet felt today by means of what he left for us and wrote for us. Tell us about your involvement in mentoring young people of today to actually become leaders of tomorrow. Tell us, Gary, what does it take?
So I think that I think first is the change from the understanding that it's not about young people being leaders of tomorrow, but in fact being leaders of today.
That's right.
So right now, right here. This moment, mm-hmm. You know, we need to prepare leaders. And you know, just as you were saying, you know, firstly for us to get across to people in that and young people in that everyone is a leader. Everyone is a leader.
Wonderful. You know, absolutely.
Because no matter what, you know, I may speak at a conference or something and be speaking about leaders and to understand that, you know, and some people say, well, you know, I didn't come to the conference or I wasn't part of it. I don't understand leadership because I'm not a CEO of a company or on a board or on the leadership of an organization or a church or whatever it may be. And I'm saying, you know, for example, mothers and fathers have the job of leading families.
In fact,
the Bible speaks about it and says, one of the things about leadership is that if you can't lead your own family, you need to be careful about leading in the church, you know. So there in that moment, in that, you know, as a mother or a father, it drives me crazy because I'll have someone saying either, you know, I'm just a housewife or I'm just a house husband. And that's all, you know, that is one of the greatest responsibilities.
Yes.
It's crazy. Mm. It's one of the greatest responsibilities that we have is in leading our families, you know. So because I believe everyone is a leader, that we need to start investing in people as soon as possible, you know, in what it needs to be leadership, in what a good leader is.
Yes.
And understanding that, because young people nowadays, and look here, I'm in my 40s, so you can guess where about in that range of 40s that I am. I'm past it in a sense that I'm, in so many ways, I'm clueless about the absolute needs of young people. So my role as a leader could be as a mentor and as a leader, I understand all of that, but we need to be training young people to lead, to sharpen their skills in leadership so that they can be leading and training and mentoring people younger than them, whatever that may be. So whether it be a person in matric or grade 8 or 9, you know, leading someone in grade 0 and grade 1, because what's happening outside there is there are so many incredible distractions out there, you know, and everyone follows
so many voices.
Absolutely.
Many voices.
Everyone follows someone. And so if we're not clear about leadership and the principles of leadership, because you'll know, David, the sooner we get into understanding and training young people, for the sake of our country, for the sake of our community. It wasn't me who said it, that said everything rises and falls on leadership.
Yes.
And that is the bottom line.
Yes.
And, you know, young people today, it's very different for us in that. I see it in my kids, in Rebecca and Daniel, how different the world is to them.
Technology, everything.
I mean, I didn't realize a producer goes and tells us there's like 2 million people listening. I said a friend of mine from San Diego, Vessel, and my sister-in-law from Atlanta, Leslie, you know, Facebooking and tweeting, saying we're listening, and it's just a crazy world out there.
It is. Isn't it wonderful?
But the most most, I don't think we're living in a more exciting time than we are now when it comes to training leaders and understanding how it is that we can lead. And I let me to be honest with you in that I love leading. A lot of our staff at Grace Point and that are young leaders. Mm-hmm. And there's not a better place. They keep you energized. They keep you sharp. Mm. It's probably the most exciting place to be able to be in a place to train just leaders generally, but certainly young leaders in that. And it's so critical, you know, David, that we start. Because, of course, the greatest form of leadership is self-leadership.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
if you can't lead yourself, you
exactly
won't.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, exactly right. So the whole issue of self-leadership mm-hmm. is important, which is around self-discipline. Around, mm-hmm. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, the access that people have and that kids have mm-hmm. and people and young people have to technology, mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. well, in fact, and of course, then to anything, whether mm-hmm. it be pornography mm-hmm. or whatever mm-hmm. it may be, mm-hmm. Around stuff and that, you know. And mm-hmm. if we don't start with a strong sense of self-leadership. Mm-hmm. Mm. You know, which means self-discipline, etc., mm. etc. Et mm. You know, we're going to continue to face a breakdown of our community and of our society.
It's very interesting, you know, Gary, that on Robben Island they say Nelson Mandela was so rigorous with regard to self-discipline, insisting on, you know, making up his bed, which was just really a blanket and a pillow, but he made it up himself. He got up every day, apparently, at the same time. It infused, a leader infused with a sense of self-discipline. I know how special it is when, for example, Tevia, our one twin, came to me yesterday and said, "Dad, would you like a cup of tea?" Oh. Now, of course, once Dad's in his study, I almost said studio, once Dad's in his study, that's where I dream. And yet he knocked on the door and said, "Dad, would you like a cup of tea?" And then Nathaniel would come to me, the other twin, and say, "Dad, how do you actually get your photos from space?" And it just takes me into a different arena, an arena where you do realize that our wonderful jewels of tomorrow are in fact our jewels of today.
Absolutely.
You know, Gary, every time I look up at the Milky Way, stars don't compete for space. Let me say it again. Wow. Stars don't compete for space. Let me say it this way. Whenever I look up at the Milky Way galaxy, there's enough space for every star to be a star. It's not that some are stars and some are not stars. Every single star that we see in the Milky Way is indeed a star. And I think that's what you're saying, is it not, Gary?
And I'm assuming that every star is different to the next star.
That is correct.
So there's no two stars
which are identical.
It would be identical, you mm-hmm. know. And so part of understanding that, when we, you know, with leadership with young kids, with young people, is for them to understand their individuality, mm-hmm. And how that of course must parallel with their place in community. But certainly in them for them to understand that they're okay as they are.
Right.
You know? There's no need to conform to other mm-hmm. thing or other people or other pools and that. But they're okay as they are. They're individual. Mm-hmm. God made them and created mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. In a beautiful and wonderful way, and to understand that, and part of the self-leadership thing is exactly that, saying I don't have to, you know, I live by this thing. I live by the fact that that only God should be allowed to determine your worth.
And that's so true. Yeah. His voice is the voice we should heed, not the voice of man.
Exactly. So only God should determine our value in that. Mm-hmm. So in understanding that individuality of who I am as a star, and I've got my place to shine and all the rest of it.
That's beautiful.
I think it's important that people are shaped on that, because there are so many things, so many voices, as you said, David, vying for our attention.
It's incredible.
Yeah. But this issue around self-leadership, I mean, you're talking about Nelson Mandela making his bed and stuff like that, you know.
Yes.
You know, I think we have to continuously ask ourselves, and that as parents, and that, you know, are the things that we're doing and saying for our, you know, and things that you know, in the way we are bringing up our children, is it leading them in the direction of self leadership, or is it, or are we leading them to a place of dependability, of, you know, even laziness, of you know, and this issue around around self leadership is so critical, and I think that that parents or older, the older generation, or, you know, sort of my generation, have a responsibility to the next generation, the generation after that, to obviously to lead by example, which is absolutely critical. Mm-hmm. But in somehow to ensure that we are shaping and molding our kids and the generation that comes after us to ensure that they understand the essence of self leadership.
You know? Now, of course, you have a huge number of dealings, Gary, with young people. What do you believe is at the core of, you know, such addiction to, say, pornography or to drugs and, you know, that which devours and destroys? Do you believe that people are simply heeding the voice of the herd that, for example, I am no good, I will never achieve, I am not anyone special, certainly I'm not a star born to shine? Do you believe it's thoughts like that, Gary, which intimidate people, that they actually put themselves in a box?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, David. My sense is that people are stuck by what is happening around us. You know, as we used to say, keeping up with the Joneses, you know, and thinking that the more we have and the more we buy and the more we purchase and the more resources we've got gives us some form of value, which is so untrue.
You know, I've
said this many times. I've done plenty of funerals and not one hearse has had a trailer fender, fender trailer, you know, hugging on behind it and they're taking stuff.
I've often thought of that myself.
So there's this essence, of the pool of people around us, and that, and keeping up with. I mean, it's simple things from cell phones to whatever. But just keeping up, you know, and saying, well, you know, if your cell phone's older than a couple of, but that's all one thing. You know, there is that pool. Mm-hmm. But again, it goes back to saying, to making sure that our children and young people understand their identity and who they are as people, and obviously from my perspective, who they are in God. That's the one thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing, when it comes to the addiction thing, in my understanding, is that I really do believe that people are born with levels of addiction. And in fact, you know, so we have a recovery course, addiction recovery course at our church that we hold, you know, and I'll never forget the one guy stood up and said, you know, a whole lot of people, you know, will be here for, you know, sexual addiction or drug addiction or alcohol addiction, whatever the case may be. And he went on the course in that and he said, you know, my addiction is none of those things. He says, but I have a shopping addiction. You know? And he said, my finances are in a complete mess because, you know, I buy things with money that I don't have. You know, and I can't afford the things, you know. And so every one of us, and if you think about it, every single one of us has a level of addiction. We're all addicted to something, you know. Now, sometimes, and I think that some people have a part of addiction in them, you know, that on a greater level than others.
So you're saying there are various levels.
I believe that without it. But I think everyone is addicted to something. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. And some people, I think, will have the different levels of addiction. And in some cases, that unfortunately leads to addiction to drugs and, you know, pornography or whatever. Mm-hmm. Don't forget the access in that. I remember I was in grade 7, I keep on forgetting what he's done at 5, and that when I saw my first porno book. It was at school, and a friend of ours came from Portugal, Madeira, actually the island, and went home for the holidays and came back with a book. And of course, those are the days where all the magazines were covered and there were stars in the right places and all the rest of it. And you couldn't get access to it in South Africa at the time. And I remember all the boys standing around this book, you know, sort of 30 of us trying to get a look at what was going on inside this book. But the access to pornography now and other stuff is so easy. You know, it's so simple. And just a short while ago in our house, and that we would say to our kids, you know, you can't have the computer in your room, and you know, it had to be in a place where people had access to it, in the screen. You'd be faced away from the wall, whatever the case may be. In such a short period of time, though, now with smartphones and all the rest of it, you know, you can be anywhere you want and have access to pornography and that. You know,
absolutely.
So which goes back again to the issue of self leadership. You know, saying, you know, and dealing with stuff around addiction and my addictions and your addictions and everyone else's addiction is really about how we lead ourselves. It's critical.
Now, tell me, Gary, you, of course, have just returned, flown back from Dar es Salaam, I understand, and I'd love to know, what was Gary Rivas doing in Dar es Salaam?
Well, you know, I just think that's South Africa has a critical role to play in Africa.
And vice versa, and more and more,
businesses, obviously, you know, are spreading out into Africa, and there's mm-hmm. a real sense.
They are indeed some of the largest corporate giants.
And it's a wonderful continent. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is a beautiful mm-hmm. continent to be part of. Mm-hmm. So I spent some time a week before that. I was in Gaborone and Botswana doing some stuff with church leaders, mm-hmm. being part of something called the Global Leadership Summit, as well as the Alpha Course training and preaching mm-hmm. And just spending time with community in this last weekend's case in Dar es Salaam, and it was an incredible opportunity. I've been to Dar a couple of times. Love this city. It's an amazing city, amazing people, and I'm just so privileged to be able to be part of networking with churches in Dar es Salaam and organizations, and also to be involved in developing development of leaders. You know, there is such a cry in Africa and across the world, for that matter. But I'm more interested in Africa, obviously, in South Africa. There's such a cry out for strong leadership. I mean, it's just desperate.
Absolutely,
it's so desperate, mm-hmm. you know. And the more you read, and the more you listen, and the more you listen to the average person on the streets, and that, you know, there is a genuine cry for strong leadership in our communities, in our countries. And part of my role, and it's you know, in the global scheme, it's an insignificant role, but I just want to, David, I just have this real desire to just make a difference, you know, where I can, you know. And I think that we can learn so much from Africa. Africa can teach the world so much. There is such incredible giftedness and resources in Africa, and it's a beautiful continent, and just a privilege to be able to do some work in Africa. And I appreciate the fact that that my church releases me to go and do some of the work in that in Africa.
I think you've touched on some key points, Gary, and of course, thinking of my childhood, I remember the year 1969 very vividly. I don't think Gareth was born, was he, Duncan? 1969. Duncan, our audio engineer,
were you
Duncan,
born, Duncan
was not born. Gareth was not born yet in 1969. And Duncan, were you born in 69? He was also not born in 69. So I remember being in Krugersdorp. And there was, of course, a lot of buzz that man was about to set foot on another world, the moon.
Wow.
And, you know, Gary, it was so incredible because all that David Block had at the time was access to one of these handheld radios. Those were the days we used to listen to Lorenzo Marx's radio and John Burks and so forth.
Long John Burks.
And so, you know, I followed the entire moon landing just by means of a simple handheld radio. Those were the days of no television. And now we're sitting in studio due to the marvel of technology and the incredible foresight of Gareth Cliff by means of this global digital streaming, where people around the world can follow any event at any single time, can tweet us, can follow us. It really enlarges our little village. But I always like to think of it, Gary, that I'm still in a village. In other words, I know people in this locale, A, B, C, D, and E.
Sure.
And it's incredible, is it not? Have you often pondered about this?
That's the most magnificent thing. I mean, it really is. I mean, we have live streaming in that of our services on Sundays.
Oh, yes. Know? Are they all streamed out live? And would you like to give your Facebook page, your web page?
No, it's gracepoint.co.za.
Okay.
And it's amazing because we have people in that. Look, I say to people, if you are out the country, whatever the case may be, first prize, find a local church. Get involved in a local community.
Yes.
I mean, I know this. I don't want to sound disrespectful, but hey man, don't hanker after South Africa. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. wherever you are, get involved in. I mean, mm-hmm. it drives me when I know people outside of the country, and they need to just get involved in local communities mm-hmm. where they are, mm-hmm. get part of the life. Mm-hmm. And so if it's someone from Grace Point who's traveling mm-hmm. and they were part of a series, whatever the case may be, then by all means catch up and all the rest of it, you know. But otherwise, get involved locally, you know, mm-hmm. wherever you are. But so we get notes in that from all over the world saying, you know, I was in Russia, I was in. Mm-hmm. You know, in the States,
and following your podcast or whatever.
So live streaming, so you get to see it. So sometimes when I'm away over a weekend, and that I get I get to watch the services happening in our church and that from wherever I am.
It is incredible technology.
It's beyond, and it can be used for such good. Mm-hmm. And I think majority of technology is used for incredible good. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to celebrate that. Not all technology, not all advancement is evil or ugly or whatever the case may be. I mean, you were talking about Galileo early on over our lunch, we've got to embrace it and use it in the most wonderful way. And then I think a lot about life, just generally a lot about life, a lot about Africa, a lot about humanity. Majority of it is actually really, really, really good. You know, unfortunately, you know, we give ear, and the voices that we listen to are the negative voices all the time.
Absolutely. You know, Gary, this has been an area of much concern, and you can read about it on my webpage, www.davidblock.co.za, www.davidblock.co.za, where I speak about the power of voices, and it just strikes me that the tiniest voice of negativity can detonate our balloon of enthusiasm.
Absolutely.
You know, Neil Armstrong was so enthusiastic about going to the moon. He was so determined to be the first human being to place his foot on lunar terrain and to say that's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. You've got that sense of focus, determinism, goal setting. It's just, in a sense, it's become so diluted, in a sense, because we listen to the wrong voice.
Absolutely. But you know, the thing is, David, it is a choice. You know, we have a choice who we want to listen to. We have a choice who we want to hang around with. You know,
absolutely.
So, I mean, you'll know right now that, you know, I say this to my community. I say to them, you know, you get invited to a braai. And depending who the people are, you know for a fact, either you're going to walk away there going, oh my word, you know, it's just like it's not even worth living in this country or living in another day, because you just, this negative, you know, the spiral of negativity is just too much, you know. So you have a choice who you want to hang around with. You have a choice about, you know, the power of choice is a big thing, David.
Absolutely.
You know? And so you can choose who you want to hang around with. You want to choose what voice you want to listen to as you speak about and that, you know. But let me tell you the key to all of that. People go like, so there's joy that we speak about, you know, and joy is not a,
it's not happiness.
Not a happiness, you know.
No.
But
it's an internal joy.
But, and can I tell you what? The essence of joy is exactly around that, is around gratitude. I can tell you now, if you want to know a person who's got this inner joy or happiness thing from inside, that actually no matter what is happening around them, there's still a sense of hope and peace in that, the sense of joy in that. A lot of it is around gratitude. Mm. So if you think about a person who's incredibly negative or a person who's just a big-time moaner, I can tell you now, if you just do a bit of an investigation, unpacking, they're ungrateful for what they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost a, I mean, I put my head on the block for it and that, you know, you just unpack the thing a bit, ungrateful for what they have. So, you know, and so part of the moaning and part of the negativity is going like, you know, I wish I had more, or I wish I could do this or whatever. And instead of sitting back and going, what do I have? I actually have quite a lot, you know, a lot to be grateful for.
To God be grateful, absolutely.
This gratitude thing is a big thing. And I say to people that if you're feeling depressed or negative or whatever the case may be, I mean, just take a moment, and it sounds like so, I don't know what, but, you know, sort of pie in the sky type of stuff and that. But I'm telling you now, David, it's around this issue of gratitude, about being grateful for what we have, you know. We have a bit of a laugh on that in our community, and that I speak about the fact that it could always be worse. You know, and just to keep this as a reminder for people, you know, and I give people a test, a homework, and I say to them, you know, I want you to, after the community, go outside, you know, stand next to your car, and look at your car and say it could be worse. You know, there are people,
and
it could be worse. I drive past people every day having to stand in long queues and that, waiting for transport and in the rain, in the sun, or whatever the case may be. And so instead of, you know, being you know, whining about the car that you drive, whatever, just think it could be worse. And do that.
Worse.
You know, I tell people, you know, go home. I said to them, go home and stand in your garden, you know, and look at your house or your apartment or whatever, and look at them, really say out aloud, listen, it could be worse. It could be worse. There are people tonight who are going to be sleeping under a bridge somewhere. You know, just be grateful for what you have. You know, so I tell people, just continuously go around, look at stuff that you've got, and say it could be worse. And then, of course, I say to the men in our community, I say, tomorrow morning when you wake up, I want you to turn around, look at your wife, and say, hey, man, it could be worse.
That's lovely.
Don't do that.
But you know,
you do,
Gary,
whatever you do, don't do that.
You know, it reminds me of an incredible story, And this story really touched the very, and touches to today, the very core of my being. And that is that, can you imagine, listeners, suffering from leprosy? Can you imagine that this is not simply something material that you are suffering from, but you walk and possibly your thumb falls off, and you walk some more and possibly some flesh falls off and a toe might fall off. And then, but even more important than the disease is the ostracization. You are ostracized by being a leper. You were an absolute outcast of society. You were someone no one wanted to associate with in any means or form. Ostracization in the grandest of scale. Ostracized. Touch me not. Stay away. The lepers had to scream out, unclean, unclean. Do not touch me. Not only loneliness at its greatest, but to be ostracized, to be so humiliated about that which you have absolutely no control, your health, to be so humiliated, and then the final, to be so outcast, to be so cast out of society. And you know, Gary, you've been touching so beautifully on gratitude. And you know, I would have thought that of the 10 lepers who were healed by Jesus, all 10 would have come back and said, wow, we are healed. We whole now, and so forth. And the interesting thing is, and I was saying this to a principal of a high school, which will remain nameless, but here in Johannesburg. And I said to her, you know, it's very interesting that of all the 10 lepers, only one was filled with gratitude. The other 9 forgot. Only one came to say thanks. And I don't think times have changed too much therein. What are your thoughts with that, Gary?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, and of course we have modern day leprosy. I mean, obviously leprosy is still around in that. Mm-hmm. But you take other ways in which we shun people. You know, because but I think to myself that, you know, although I speak about this gratitude thing, I take my salary for granted. I often take my kids for granted. The worst thing that can happen in marriage. Mm-hmm. We're so many.
Take your spouse for granted.
I mean, I can tell you now, people don't. People in relationship, that one of the greatest killers of relationships and marriages is we take our spouses for granted. Mm-hmm. You know, our children for granted. And mm-hmm. So we do that. You know, but mm-hmm. there are many ways in which we shun people in that. You know, just think about certainly a phenomenon in Johannesburg is we have so many people standing at the street lights and that. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, asking for money and stuff like that. And I watch people. I ride a motorbike, so I get to see everything that's happening. I watch people in that, you know, and people will pull up at a traffic light, and mm-hmm. And they won't even look at the person asking for money because really that is, you know, they're a hindrance. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And so now you can imagine now. So already you have there is no dignity. Mm-hmm. You know, you have no money, you're begging for food, you're standing in the sun all day, in the rain, whatever the case would be. And on top of it then, a person pulls up at the robot in a car, comfortable, God, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And so not only do you not have dignity, but then they will not even afford the dignity of your identity, of mm-hmm. your presence, mm-hmm. you know. So not even giving money, just the dignity of looking at the person in the eyes and acknowledging their existence. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think we realize, and I don't want to sound pious, but what a big difference that makes, you know, to people. But what we do is that we won't look. You know, we think that if we don't look, they'll go away. You know, and just think about that person standing there. Just offer dignity. We shun people today, even, you know, and they're different forms of leprosy. You know.
So you are listening to Professor David Block, and I have the great joy and privilege of interviewing a dear friend of mine, and I know this friendship will deepen more and more as the waves of the ocean do, and that is to interview Gary Rivas. I've been very privileged to speak at his church at Grace Point. I've always felt extremely welcome there. And you might say to me, how could a scientist and a professor of applied mathematics feel comfortable at Grace Point? Well, let me tell you how. There's sincerity. I value sincerity above so much else. These are sincere people. I value them when they greet me as I arrive in my vehicle. They look me in the eye, as Gary has said, and they acknowledge my presence. And then there's an incredible degree of warmth and of interaction and of care. And what more does one really want when you arrive for a talk than to be greeted, to be acknowledged, but not only to be acknowledged, but to be very warmly acknowledged? You see, this is part of David Block. This is what the longings of David Block is, that I love to meet with people who are leaders of today and of tomorrow, but who are filled with a sense of awe, a sense of wonder, and a sense of caring. There's also something very important which I'd like to share with you, and that is Gary and I just had lunch. He treated me very graciously, so Gary, to lunch just prior to this digital streaming globally, and we were discussing Galileo Galilei. And that, to me, in a sense, is where the whole rift between science, Gary, and scripture actually really started headlong. Yeah. Is that, you know, here was Galileo saying, I observe moons going around the planet Jupiter, and yet there wasn't that warmth, that sincerity, that embracing of that which he saw. I believe it's so important for us to embrace each other's disciplines. Your concluding thoughts in the last minute, please, Gary.
Thanks, David. Someone said to me that authenticity trumps coolness and being cool. And I think people want to see that you're authentic long before you are or you think you're someone else. Mm-hmm. Just be true to who you are. And I think that's a value that needs to be held in the church. And certainly if people are going to, whether it be whatever leadership, political, organizational leadership, be authentic. You know, be yourself in that, because it trumps cool every time. Mm-hmm. I see some of the guys in their late 40s, 50s wearing skinny jeans and, you know, wanting to really look cool. Just be authentic, man. Just be true to who you are. I think trumps being cool any day.
That's part of our humanity, is to be cool, not to wear a mask, to be authentic, and to be ourselves. Gary, it's been a great joy having you in studio here in Rivonia with us. It's been a blessed time. I say again, a blessed time. Until next week, to all our listeners, may God richly bless you. Mm-hmm. May his countenance shine upon you and give you much peace. Until next Tuesday, this is Professor David Block signing out from Cliff Central.